Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, and welcome to The Backstory with Claire.
And Susie. In each episode, we'll be hearing about an experience that has happened to someone that shaped who they are.
30 minutes that remind us that everyone's dealing with something. So we're a documentary podcast, a docupod.
Except you made that word up. So, Claire, here we are with this week's backstory, and it sounds like a really interesting and different one.
Yes, it is. This is the story of Ali Bendigani, who is an immigration barrister. I think if he was in an American movie, we would call him a human rights lawyer.
Oh, nice.
Because essentially he defends immigrants against deportation and that kind of thing. His job is fascinating, but this is his backstory about how you get from growing up in a family with no money in small town Wales with a Welsh mum and an Iranian dad who was studying law but was mostly unwell, I think, so didn't actually practice it much.
Okay.
And four other siblings to being a shit hot barrister in London. So it's all about social mobility in action. Here we are. The way that we sort of find this works very well is to sort of look back and sort of imagine that line, like going back from your life, and there's those peaks and those troughs. And I just wondered what peak or trough you wanted to tell me about today.
I think there's definitely a narrative there, which I think about quite a lot, which is how I moved, really, from growing up on free school meals, hiding that because I was ashamed of it, living in council accommodation and with the threat of eviction.
Right.
Having no money, never going on holiday, never going to a restaurant until I was in my late teens, having no books on the shelf. And that wasn't bad. I mean, you know, you don't know what you don't have when you don't have it. But to move from that to, you know, walking around Lincoln's Inn Fields and going to the High Court and all this stuff. I mean, sometimes I do think, like, what am I doing here? It doesn't make any sense.
So what was at the heart of that change? Like, can you pinpoint what gave you the ambition, what, like, drove you?
Yeah, I think it was that... I think it was the strength of the relationship I had and still have, especially the relationship I had when I was young with my dad. So he was studying law, and he inspired me because of the way he conducted himself, really, and the values that he held dearly, and which he lived out every day. So the way he treated people was with respect, treat them fairly, and to understand other people and where they're coming from, and also to just do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And that was impressed on me, I think, without realizing it from quite a young age. And so one instance, he judicially reviewed the local education authority to get me into the good comprehensive school as opposed to the bad one. And if you went to the bad one, you'd sort of definitely end up without A-levels and probably with a pretty decent criminal record. And if you go to the good comprehensive school, you'll definitely do your GCSEs. You might do your A-levels, you won't get in trouble with the police, basically. That was the kind of distinction. So I didn't get into the good one because of some arbitrary rule. My dad challenged that basically in the courts, and the local education authority had to change their mind. And then a group of my friend's parents came round to the house, and they asked my dad to help them to do the same thing for their children that he did for me. Mm. And I remember I tried to leave the room, and my dad told me to stay and watch. So I watched what was going on, and basically they wanted to give him envelopes full of money. And they didn't quite know how to deal with my dad because he's from Iran and he's not Welsh and he's, you know, not English and he has a funny accent and he's his own man, right? So nothing like them. And they asked him to help, which of course he did. But he wouldn't take the money when I couldn't believe it, you know, because I thought that's more money than I've ever seen.
You could have really done with that at the moment at the time.
Yeah, big style. But he refused to take it. And then he did this funny little thing where he said, in my culture, we take £1 from each of you. It's a cultural thing. And he took £1 off all of them. And then he turned to me, they all left and they said thank you. And then afterwards he turned to me and I said, what's this thing about your culture? He said, look, I just made it up. I made it up. But anyway, here's some money. And he gave me the money.
So did he just do it to make them feel a bit better about...
Like... Yeah. And to sort of play with them a little bit, you know, right. Because I think they expected, you know, he was playing on their expectations of something. And I think he found that funny.
Right.
And he killed two birds with one stone because he got to give me my pocket money without having it to come from his own pocket.
Yeah.
But that left a deep impression on me because it made me understand very keenly that you can do something which is good to help people. And it's natural when it is a reflection of who you are and how you live. So that was a pretty fundamental thing. And then one of the things that I'll never forget is when we lived in Aberystwyth, and my dad was still not, and he still isn't, as I don't think he's even British. I think he's still got his Iranian passport. But in Aberystwyth, he had to go and report to the police station. And he took me with him. And I remember him going into the police station looking one way, and coming out of the police station looking quite different. And I remember understanding instinctively that something not very good had happened. His demeanour was different. Mm. And I think he'd been sort of mistreated in some way.
Oh, really?
I suspect.
You don't know?
I suspect, no. Because there is a sort of cultural thing where you don't ask.
So you got your A-levels and then, like, was it always an expectation that you would go to university?
I don't think it was an... I think it was an expectation, actually. Yeah, it was an expectation. So I went to university, studied law, hated it.
Where did you go?
Cardiff. I went to Cardiff, which is where I was living at the time, because I couldn't afford to go anywhere else. Had to do the bar course quite soon after my law degree. So I went to London and studied there, got into more debt because the course cost thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds. So I had to borrow for that. And then, you know, that's when you're supposed to apply for a trainee position as a barrister, what's called a pupil, pupillage, and you become a pupil. But I couldn't afford to do that, so I had to work for several years, A, to pay that money back, and B, to survive, and then also give a little bit of money back to the family.
So what were you working as at that point?
I worked in a law centre in East London, a place called the Refugee Legal Centre.
Right.
Working, helping refugees. And it's there that I was able to advocate on behalf of refugees and learn about the different countries and all the rest of it.
Like, looking back on it all, going back to that time when you were a teenager, was there times there where it could have gone down a different road?
Luckily, I'm not sure how it really came about. I think it was basically because of my dad's influence. It's I didn't want to let him down. actually. And he was, and also because he'd been through so much, and so had my mum, actually, because my mum comes from a large family in Wales, very poor, didn't receive much education growing up. Both her parents are dead. No money, no inheritance or property or anything like that. And my father similarly came from a pretty bad place in Iran. So there was an obligation, I think. I felt an obligation to do something and move beyond that where they had got to. And that had always been kind of instilled in me that that was going to happen, that I had to do it. So I think that kind of propelled me. That was the momentum that had been there and moving in me all through growing up, and it just carried me over. I think that's probably the best way to explain it.
And has that happened for all your brothers and sisters, or...?
No. No, they're all... I think out of the five of us, I think I'm the only one who's got A-levels, and only one other has GCSEs.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what was the difference for you?
I don't know. Maybe I had the benefit of more time and attention from my parents as the eldest. That's a thing, isn't it? Maybe.
Mm.
I think with more people come more problems. And so perhaps there was just too much going on.
So you just got a bit more attention that was maybe vital at a very important time.
I think maybe that's right, yeah.
Because, there's obviously like a few sort of moments in your childhood that sort of formed a kind of understanding as to what you wanted to do later in a way.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Or they were like integral to like little experiences that kind of peak out for you.
Yeah.
And like you haven't talked about your mum very much. Did she not influence you particularly, or like...
My mum was... No, I think my mum was incredibly loving and caring and did everything she could to raise us and to take care of us. But I didn't have the same relationship with her. Mum was mum. But certainly my value system and my the what I aspired to came from my relationship with my father, definitely.
I had a boyfriend who came from a very different background, and he did exceptionally well in a similar way to you, in that he sort of moved from his like sort of socioeconomic kind of situation to a completely different one. And I found like books where he'd written like kind of new words, like to improve like his vocabulary, and like he'd like. He consciously like learnt wines. He really, I think he was at Oxford and So I just wondered whether like you found yourself doing a similar kind of thing. Like, did you have to, like you said, you hadn't really eaten out until you were like in your teenage years, late teens. Like, how did you kind of fit in, like in that move sort of thing?
I didn't. I still don't. You know, there's part of me that doesn't fit in at all, and I quite like that. Because it means I fit in elsewhere with other people. But I was very lucky. I went out with a girl when I was 14, and she was very...
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Well off, and her father, I think, was an architect or an interior designer or something, and she's from a fantastic family, and her two older brothers were sort of graphic designers and architects, and it was very arty, very cultured. And we were together for a few years, and through that family, I learnt that people drink wine when they have dinner, and that the bowl of water with the lemon in the Chinese is not something to drink. It's something to wash your hands in, right?
Right.
And learnt about art and design and things like that. So that opened up a whole new world, really,
right,
which I'm very grateful for. But no, I didn't consciously go about learning how to be middle class. That's just something that happens if you hang around with lots of middle class people, I think.
And has your dad like expressed to you like his kind of pride in what you've achieved, or?
Once when I got, you do a pupillage for a year, and then so there's like 800 people apply. There are six places. If you get in, you get your pupillage. You do that for a year, and then they decide whether to take you on at the end. So it's a year-long interview and training. It's like apprenticeship. When I told him I got taken on, he said he was very proud. But apart from that, you know, his attitude is, well, you got everything. Why wouldn't you? Don't write a story about it. Get on with it. What's next? That's his attitude, which is a good one. And you need that. You need that to have that as part of you, I think, to get on with it.
And so, like, do you think you're going to have a similar, like, relationship with your son?
I would be very happy if he's very creative, actually, so he loves making stuff and drawing, and he's very good. And he likes building, so if he was to become an engineer, I think the most important thing is that he's happy. And I think that's the big difference in the generational shift from my mum and my dad, where they came from, to where I am. And my attitude, I have the privilege and the luck, the good luck, to be able to say to my son, do whatever you want. Whereas I think for them it was, look, we can't help you. You've got to go for it.
So, Susie, what did you make of that?
Do you know, I'm really interested in social mobility, and actually it's good to hear kind of a personal account of that and to find out about the influences for that. You know, I thought Ali was really good at defining what had made that difference for him, you know, and obviously put it down to his father mainly. But I think maybe he also underplayed his own character and, you know, his aptitude. And, you know, obviously he's respecting his dad and wanting to please his parents. But, you know, he's clearly got something about him that made him push forward.
Yeah. And obviously his dad, like, taking the local authority to task for the school that he went to, that was a game changer.
Yeah, definitely.
As I think if he'd gone to the other school, he wouldn't have had, like, half the opportunities.
Which is dreadful, isn't it?
I know. That's shocking in itself. And he took risks.
Yes, he did, yeah.
He took on debt, which was brave, and definitely puts off many young people who are from poorer backgrounds and, like, are kind of looking to go to university.
Yeah, do you know, I also found it very telling that he was the only one of his siblings who made it to university. And I think, you know, between the others, they got kind of a smattering of qualifications. But Ali was definitely the one that you know, made a success academically.
Yeah, by a long way.
Yeah, so I went away and had a little look into this because I find it very interesting, and looked into whether being the firstborn makes you more successful. And it does look as though there is an edge to being the firstborn.
Oh, so she's been doing her
homework. I have. Look, and I have the paperwork to prove it. So what I found out is that it's kind of something to do with that undivided attention. I mean, it's not rocket science, is it? It's that undivided attention that firstborns receive from their parents. You know, I can think back myself to when my children were little. You know, with my firstborn, I had more time to read and to play with them. And I think that's kind of borne out by, you know, the higher tests, the higher kind of scores that firstborns get in cognitive tests by the time they're one. There was a big decade-long study of 5,000 children, which found that kind of early boost in life is likely to sort of translate into, you know, more time spent in education and then subsequently higher salaries later in life.
Wow.
So, you know, and I guess you can see, can't you, as the household gets bigger, then parents have to kind of split their time with younger children. So they miss out on the advantage of being an only child for a time. And, you know, obviously it doesn't mean that firstborns get more love, but they definitely get more attention, you know, in those important formative years.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because like with my only children, I sort of thought, yeah, well, the older one has got all the attention that I gave him for the first 3 years. And then the second one has got like half the attention probably, but also like tons of attention from the sibling, and like, so you sort of think it's sort of been made up, don't you, like by the other sort of factors, but maybe it hasn't.
I think it's a very different experience, and I think that, you know, children can be brought up in the same family by the same parents and have a very different experience of family life. Also kind of looking at people in positions of power, you know, if you look at the number of firstborns, I think most American presidents, the majority of the science Nobel laureates, and this one's a good one, actually, 21 out of the first 23 NASA astronauts have been found to be the eldest children.
Wow.
And in girls, that eldest child effect is particularly pronounced in politics. So kind of thinking internationally, Angela Merkel, Nicola Sturgeon, Hillary Clinton, Theresa May, they're all either the eldest child or their only children.
Wow.
And I speak as the youngest of three. So.
Yeah, I was also fascinated by Ali's voice. He obviously doesn't sound like he's coming from a poor background.
No, that's right. He sounds very middle class, doesn't
he?
Yeah,
and he's exceptionally English. Like, yeah. And well spoken. So, this got me thinking about language and where it gets you, really. And it turns out I did a bit of homework.
Oh, okay.
And there's a direct correlation between children's language development and their life chances.
Right.
We all know language is a fundamental life skill for children, and it directly impacts on their ability to learn, so, and to develop friendships and on their life chances.
Okay.
So the most important factor in reaching the expected levels in English and maths at age 7 is children's language skills when they're 5. And this is even greater than the link of poverty or parental education. So, looking at sort of social mobility within that, we know that by the age of 5, 75% of children who experience poverty persistently throughout the early years are below the average in language development, compared with 35% of those who didn't experience poverty. So it's quite marked.
So, you know, do you think Ali has always had those exceptional language skills? I wonder whether, you know, he had them from...
I know, I'm really intrigued about that, or whether he's kind of picked up on those in the need to fit in now, you know, because he has got a very sort of barrister voice, if there is one. Anyway, also interesting was the choice of job for Ali, I found. Like, going into immigration, he said that being half Iranian, he always feels a bit different, and hence why he feels such an allegiance with immigrants fighting to stay here.
Yeah, I can really see that. You know, his Iranian heritage and his background, you know, where he felt very different from not having much money. And actually, he's entered these worlds where he feels different, but he's also used his knowledge of that to kind of sympathize and to advocate on behalf of people who feel alienated.
Yeah, I think it's like, I don't know if it was a conscious thing, but I love the way that he's married those two things together.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on, time for our podcast recommendation. Claire, what have we got this week?
Well, I have to say, Susie, I'm still getting over listening to Joan and Jerrica.
I completely binge listened that.
Oh my God, that is like the thinking women's comedy porn. I go from jaw-dropping shocked to like laughing out loud. Yeah, it's like no other. It's like no other podcast.
It is. It's. I think it's genius. I think it's absolutely genius. But anyway, what are we listening to this week?
Okay, I'm not going to go about that. I'm going for an oldie but a goodie this week. Death, Sex and Money.
Oh, brilliant podcast.
That's one of the first podcasts I listened to. And they're doing this summer special series called Hot Dates, where they're following a whole group of different people across America over the summer as they date. And, you know, we love dating.
Oh, we do.
So that's my recommendation this week.
Brilliant. Okay, which seamlessly brings me on to the last point that I wanted to make about Ali's story. This was really interesting, actually, because he talks about, you know, learning from a girlfriend when he was in his teens. And, you know, I think it's amazing what girlfriends and boyfriends can teach you, and you kind of become absorbed into somebody else's culture or their kind of family norms. It can be really informative. So, Claire, have you ever learned anything from past partners?
Ooh, yeah. Where should I begin? Well, I had a boyfriend in Zambia who taught me a lot about the different birds of Zambia and animal spore.
Oh, and yeah. Do you have much call for that?
Use it every day.
Of course you do.
That's very, very important fundamental knowledge to my life.
But presumably birds and animal spore specific to Zambia.
They so, were, yeah.
Yeah, so very useful so in North Norfolk.
If I ever go back,
yeah, well,
I'll be able to use those.
Absolutely.
And my brother learnt Chinese, and he always said the best way to learn a language was to have a girlfriend who spoke the language. And he said,
so that was the basis upon which he was choosing girlfriends.
Exactly.
Was it?
Yeah,
okay.
It didn't matter.
Like, nice.
What they looked like. so as long as they could speak the language, yeah. But his language skills did improve vastly.
Okay, good.
So what about you, Susie? Have you learnt much?
Yeah, I don't know that I've learnt much, but I did have a weird experience with the family of my first boyfriend where I turned up and they had a portrait of Maggie Thatcher. Ooh. In their library, which was a bit like, you know, dun-dun-dun.
My God, they had a library.
They had a library and a portrait of Thatcher. Yeah, and their first question to me, well, one of their first questions was how my parents voted. I said they voted Conservative, which they did. Mum and Dad, hope you don't mind me disclosing that. They never listen anyway. At the time, the only thing that shocked me was that they thought my parents would vote any other way.
Oh.
It didn't shock me that they'd asked me the question, whereas I think now I'd lynch them. So,
Do you think they've got like a portrait of Theresa May up on their wall now?
Yeah, well, or like me, maybe they have a dartboard of David Cameron.
Yeah,
that would be a bit more fitting, wouldn't it? As we hurtle towards Brexit.
So, so please subscribe so the programmes automatically drop in, ready for you to listen next week. And it shows support for us as well. It's entirely free. All we ask in return is that you recommend us, grab someone's phone and add us, rate us on Apple Podcasts, and tell your mates about us.
We are The Backstory Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, at The Backstory Pod on Twitter. And if anyone is searching for The Backstory on Apple Podcasts or another directory, just look for The Backstory Podcast with Claire and Susie. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.